is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
I welcome Professor Evan Ellis, Latin American research professor, the U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute, and we go immediately to large-scale strategy from Moscow's point of view. Moscow in Havana, Moscow in Caracas. A recent article in The Economist magazine, Europe-based, points to the bear in the Caribbean. These two capitals, Havana and Caracas, are understood as to be the drivers for the flow towards authoritarianism throughout Latin America. However, Russia's hand here is not fresh. This isn't about Ukraine crisis and looking to distract Washington from concentrating on Kiev to look to its southern border, the Caribbean. The Economist magazine columnist points out that in 2008, Russia sent Tupolev bombers into the region that they're capable of carrying nuclear weapons. There have also been visits by warships over these last dozen years. And that is something that I'm sure Southcom and the Pentagon paid attention to. In most recent days, there's been an understanding out of Moscow that if you do it to us, basing your missiles and your warships and your warplanes on our border, we can do it to you, United States, and push major military units into Havana and Caracas. Or can they? Professor, a very good evening to you. In Moscow, I learned from the New York Times, there's an understanding of an imperial project underway. This is by Vladimir Putin in the Kremlin and his closest advisors, a man named Patrushev, a man named Narishin. Those are both associated with national security. Narishin is the head of the version of MI6, the CIA, but also the defense minister, Shoigu, and others are part of the imperial project to reestablish or perhaps establish for the first time that Russia is a global power. Is Russia welcome in Havana? Is Russia welcome in Caracas? How is Russia being used by those governments, given their troubles with the economy, with their neighbors, and with what you'd have to say right now, the hostility of North America? Good evening to you.
Good evening to you, John. A pleasure to be on the program. As you pointed out, this is probably a bit of a tempest in a teapot, but certainly one Russian Deputy Foreign Minister Sergei Rybakov mentioned that if the United States continued to posture against Russia in the Ukraine, that Russia could consider deploying military forces to both Havana and in Caracas. Now, as you also pointed out, this is actually part of a repeated Russian cycle of trying to project threats into the U.S. near abroad at times when the United States is doing things that make Russia feel threatened in its own near abroad. Russia had largely forgotten about its engagement with Latin America, dramatically pulling out of Cuba in 1993 and remaining really outside of Latin America until 2007, 2008, when as the crisis over Georgia was heating up with two breakaway republics that were backed by Russia, South Abkhazia and South Ossetia, Russia was uncomfortable with the U.S. fleet in the Black Sea near that operation. And so Russia decided that it would send two Tu-160 Tupolev bombers, nuclear capable, although it was cautious to tell us that they were not actually carrying nuclear weapons. And they flew around the Caribbean. They went to Venezuela, Nicaragua, elsewhere. About 2.5 months later, you had a flotilla of Russian warships that showed up, led by the cruiser Peter the Great, that stopped in Venezuela. In 2013, once again, as the crisis was heating up over the Ukraine, Russia once again decided to send Tu-160 bombers to Nicaragua, again flying around the Caribbean to remind us that they could. In 2018, again, another episode where the Russians sent Tu-160 bombers, notably to Venezuela, sent a number of advisors, a later Wagner Group technical personnel to support the upgrading of Venezuelan air defenses. So it's been a repeated pattern that Russia does these kind of sending of small amounts of of capabilities on the cheap. But the reality is that Russia's actual reach in Latin America, its ability to deploy and sustain military forces is far, far less than what it was in the Cold War. And certainly with 120,000 Russian troops on the Ukraine border and the enormous expenses of that and the possibilities of crippling sanctions that would really undermine Russia's economy, which is dependent on oil. The last thing that Russia can do militarily and probably can afford is to project any type of expensive long-term power halfway around the world where its logistics ability to do so is really not there. And that was the reason why when it was first indirectly suggested that the Secretary of State, Anthony Blinken, and I believe the National Security Advisor, Jake Sullivan, basically called it bluster. And largely those who've looked at it dismiss it as a threat. However, one can recognize that Russia does have a presence largely working with anti-U.S. actors, Cuba, Venezuela, to a lesser degree, other actors such as Argentina in the region. And that continues to be a threat largely because Russia is a nuclear armed, nuclear capable adversary with really a few incentives by contrast to China to use restraint in projecting those threats. And so if Russia pulls out of the Ukraine, it'll probably do something to show it's tough in Latin America. If Russia doesn't pull out of the Ukraine, it'll probably do something to try to give the U.S. something to think about in the Ukraine. But I would suspect that whatever Russia does, it will probably be limited, cheap, and designed not to get Russia into too much trouble.
What does it do for Maduro? Let's be specific. Does it give Maduro a tool that he otherwise doesn't have or can't afford? And I mentioned there were anecdotes, there were reports, no confirmed, that there were Russian advisors or trainers working with either the Venezuelan military or the asymmetrical warfare units, sometimes called terrorists, who are battling along the border with Colombia. Does this give Maduro a power in the region that otherwise he doesn't deserve?
It really doesn't, John. At least the latest threats or the prospect of Russia deploying military capability in the region don't. But what you do allude to is important, that in a certain small way, Russia has played a role in combination with the Cubans, in combination with the Chinese and others, and certainly second fiddle to, but in combination with the Iranians, who since September of last year have been providing refined oil products to Venezuela to help keep their oil industry afloat and help get their refineries operating. But Russian help has really been in previously when Venezuela had cash under Hugo Chavez and now under Maduro, Russia sold a large quantity of material to the Venezuelan military. It sold Sukhoi 30 fighters. It sold T-72 tanks. It sold various air defense munitions. When Venezuela ran out of money, Russia, especially Rosbrand Export and its financing arm, Vishnekonombank, ran out of the ability to be able to provide things. But more recently, Russia has been doing certain things, let's call it on the cheap. As you mentioned, helping to upgrade the Venezuelan air defense system with its SA-300s, trying to get some of its previously supplied military equipment up and running because that had previously been a problem, supplying Wagner Group personnel, mercenaries for the protection, perhaps, of Maduro. And some indication, as you alluded to, that the Russians may be involved in the border region, probably in conjunction with the Cubans and others, to try to get the very grave situation there in Apure under some semblance of control, where you have the ELN and the FARC and other groups fighting it out. So the Russians do play a minor role in helping keep Maduro alive, but the new initiative that Rybakov was alluding to probably would cause nothing but trouble on top of what Russia's doing in the background.
One other capital that it has been in the news because of abuse, this is Managua, Nicaragua, and the Ortegas. The article in The Economist mentions in passing that there's a large Russian presence run by the Interior Ministry that may be surveillance. Now, this is Central America. Does that give Russia an advantage of surveillance into the U.S.? Is this a listening post that can be used for the American border? Or is it entirely, as you say, on the cheap to make the Ortegas feel supported?
What you're referring to, John, this is actually one of many different facilities that capabilities that Russia began to transfer after really Daniel Ortega returned to power in 2007 and then recognized that those breakaway republics of South Ossetia and Abkhazia. And starting then, you had a series of different things, armored vehicles, BMPs and BTRs. You had later a donation of T-72 tanks to replace the outmoded T-55s. Later, you had Mizra and Molina patrol boats that provided a downlink station for the Russian satellite navigation system, GLONASS, and a facility for the training of police personnel. Basically, the Russian version of the DEA is called the FSKN, and they had set up a facility. And so there have been allusions that maybe the GLONASS satellite downlink facility could be used for signal intelligence collection. It is suspiciously close to the U.S. embassy there in Managua. But my sense is that by contrast to Cold War Russian era facilities in places like Bejucal and Lourdes and Santiago de Cuba, which were used actively to pick up on sensitive U.S. facilities in Miami and the Southeast Coast, anything in Nicaragua, it might have some minor, what we call ELINT collection purposes, but probably the real issue of Russia is helping to keep the Ortega regime afloat and demonstrating solidarity and that Nicaragua is not alone. It was actually, the Russians were one of the few that of Ortega's friends that showed up for his new inauguration after that staged November 2020 election. So something to take into consideration, but probably not a major threat for U.S. intelligence in the region.
The Latin American research professor, Evan Ellis, at the U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute. There's a big election in Brazil this year, and we're headed there because Lula da Silva leading in the polls. Has there been a change in his understanding of the economics of being the president of the largest country in Latin America? I'm John Batchelor.